Good evening, in Jesus' name. It's a privilege to be here tonight, and as I prepared for this subject, I thought about it that this is actually a subject I enjoy thinking about and talking about, and I hope that's not a bad thing and that I don't feel too comfortable and become careless in it, but I do enjoy school. It's something that has grown for me. And this community holds fond memories for me from the time when I was in school here. And also, it has been a continuing inspiration to me to just observe your school here. And so I just encourage you with that. You know, for those of you adults here, the majority of you relate to the school as a parent. And it has been interesting for me to get that added perspective, having been a teacher before a parent. And sometimes there's this a little bit of a tension between teachers and parents, I think, because often our teachers are not parents. And at that point, sometimes we think that the parents are falling down on the job, which sometimes we do. But when we become a parent, we realize that sometimes our children don't do exactly what we wish they would. It's just the way it is. And so I've become a lot more, I think, tolerant of parents since I've become one. So I'd like to talk a bit about that tonight. What is a parent's responsibility? And I don't think it's too sweeping a statement to say that ultimately the responsibility for children is the parents. And it just stays there. And so I'd like to kind of start from that premise that the school is a way that parents delegate the responsibility that God has given them. And I think it is a wonderful tool when seen in that way. A quote, actually, Joy came across here recently that I'd also like to throw there out there in the beginning here, is that we get the child ready for the road, not the road ready for the child. I think sometimes we maybe waste energy by trying to eliminate potholes and curves and hills, when really we should teach our children how to handle some of those things, how to drive, how to watch, how to be careful, and avoid the obstacles, the pitfalls that could send them into the ditch or crash up their vehicle. I'd like to think of three aspects of responsibility we have as parents. Our children come to us as helpless individuals, and physical needs are some of the first things that they need us to take care of for them. They come helpless. So I'd like to think of physical needs that our children depend on us for. Another aspect of need that I believe we as parents are primarily responsible for is their emotional health, and also spiritual health. So I'd like to be looking at those three aspects. First of all, starting with physical needs, I'd like to turn to Matthew 7 for a few verses. I'd like to read verses 9 through 11. Jesus says here, Matthew 7, verse 9, "Or what man is there of you, whom if his son asks bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he asks a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him?" Now, often we use this passage to explain how much God cares about us and wants to give good things to us. But what I'd like to just point out is that Jesus was able to use this premise because of the natural response in a parent to give good things to their children. And that is in our heart, to do good for our children. We would never intentionally, or I would hope we would never intentionally do something, give them something that would be bad for them in the long term. And so I'd like to present an idea that appetites are acquired, not genetic. You know, our children want things, and sometimes we need to be the hard-nosed parent that decides what they are allowed to have. And our minds immediately go to food, but I'm not just talking about food. I'm not a nutritionist, a specialist on nutrition. So you can do your research on that and come to your conclusions. It's pretty obvious that children need to be fed well, okay? And so I'm not here to start a controversial debate. You may think, because of I'm Pearl's sister, that I would be brim full of all kinds of ideas to hand out to you, but I'm not. One thing I will do, recently with the CLE Light Lines, they also send parent lines often, and as I was studying for this, this one came, and it's all about using our brain. And on the back, it has a section on food for thought, and it's practical. So I have an extra copy. I'll leave it here with David. If you're interested in it and want to make copies, you may, but I'm not trying to shove it down your throat. But when we think of food, we know that we can't just go by taste in order to eat a nutritional diet. And so we need to think about purpose. The purpose is fuel for mental and physical activity. And we need to make choices based on fact and not just what feels good at the time. And that is a concept that we can teach with the food we teach our children to like. But it will spill over into many other areas. The idea that I make choices about what I eat, but also what I do, the time I spend on things, how I think. I make choices on those things, and we develop appetites for what we do often, for what we ingest. I would just mention this before we leave the food section. I believe in balance, not paranoia. We live in a world that would like to use our fears to market things. And so we have non-GMO, we have organic, we have all kinds of these choices thrown at us. I would suggest that we use balance and don't let paranoia drive us from one idea to the next. I think some of those things can have negative effects, but we do live in this world, and so I think we need to be reasonable. Maybe what's more important is... Or think of it this way. When you sit down for a meal, the food is part of it. But the routine that you have in sitting down for a meal and how you go about that is just as important. And so a regular meal time is more than just getting the food you need. It's actually in connecting with your family emotionally. And I'm not done talking about physical needs here, but... I would like you to see the connection between emotional health and physical needs being met. I think there's a direct connection there. Another thing that we develop appetites for are activities. I know you all are flogging your way through this some social media stuff, okay? So I'm not here to try to stir any of that up. I really don't know exactly what would stir it up and what won't. So I'm just going to fire some things out for you to think about. I came across a news article that had some statistics on screen time. In 2011, the average child under 8 years old spent about 5 minutes a day using a phone or a tablet. In 2017, that's up to 48 minutes a day. I guess what this tells me is that regardless where you come out on this as a church, it's up to you parents whether it's going to work or not. It really makes little difference where you come to as a church, because it's what you parents decide and allow in your homes and how you see it. That's really going to make the difference. One nonprofit organization said, referring to that change that great increase in screen time for children. He said these changes are fundamentally redefining childhood experiences. And so I think we need to consider carefully how that changes a child's experience. And I would suggest that we need to promote getting them involved in activities that put them in touch with the real world and not just some virtual world behind a screen. A world where they go out and they trial and they error, where they dream, imagine, where they create. An idea that came across recently that I really hadn't thought of before, I've always told my students that boredom happens in the mind, and it's the problem of the person who's bored. I had a slightly new idea presented to me, and that is that boredom is important. What good idea have you gotten without sitting in some time of inactivity, or you're up against an obstacle and you just can't go? And so I would suggest that boredom is the seedbed of imagination and creativity. And when we just entertain our children to get them off our back and so on, we just may be killing their imagination, their creativity. We maybe need to let them be bored, but then teach them how to create a tool bag of ways to deal with it. Ways to look at their surroundings and come up with something to do. And try to direct them towards something that is productive. So maybe instead of entertaining, we can help them develop a boredom toolkit. A person that has a kit like that is never bored. They may have times of inactivity, but it's just until they stir up something else to think about and something else to do. Another area where appetites, I believe, are acquired is the areas of interest that we have. And it's not uncommon for students to think that they aren't interested in the activities that the school is offering. And so I would, as parents, I think our responsibility lies in being willing to be pushed outside of our own comfort zone. I think children often mirror the attitude that their parents have when it comes to new things. In my observation, it is that way. Children who are willing to, oh yeah, they'll try it. They don't mind trying it. Often their parents are that way. And so I just offer that as a challenge to analyze your own response to new ideas, new information. Is it defensive or willing to learn, willing to give it a go? And that could apply to things like food. If we want our children to eat well, maybe we need to look at our own habits. It could apply to games. If our children don't like to play games outside of their rut at school, are we willing to play games with them that they want to at home? It could apply to jobs. Maybe our children don't find joy in the jobs that we think could be at least tolerable. But maybe they are mirroring our response when we get put on for this or that at church. Another thing that I call it a physical need that we as parents are responsible for is just the teaching discipline. I'm not necessarily talking about the correction of wrong in this case, but helping our children develop an internal guide to where it doesn't necessarily take an external compulsion to make them do the right thing. And that doesn't just happen overnight, I know. But I think it's important that we work toward that. And routines that we develop, I think, are important for that, to where they know kind of how a general day runs and kind of when they're expected to get up and when we're going to have breakfast, and that they're encouraged to be prompt. And again, I think our example as parents is important. I think about that sometimes when I notice that Joy's called for a meal, and I notice the children haven't moved. And then I realize I haven't either. And so it it comes back to often our habits are the best teachers, our example. The work they do at home, whether it's chores around the house or whatever, just trying to help them learn to do it well and to maybe try to enjoy work, I think is important. Or when we aren't enjoying it, that we can at least get after it, and maybe it'll be more tolerable that way. And one reason I think teaching work at home is so important is often school is presented as fun, and I think that's a bit of an improper concept. School is work. You go there to work. In a lot of ways, it's the children's first job. They're there every day. They have a required job to do, and it's work. And I think maybe sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot when we too much play the thing of school being fun. And now I don't at all suggest that school isn't fun. But I think it's in achievement due to hard work is the kind of fulfillment that we'd like to promote in school. And I think our role as parents, and we could say as teachers in school, is to help them achieve rather than to do things for. Do it with them, not for them, so that they can feel the sense of accomplishment when they have done it. I'd like to talk now a little bit about, okay, we've been looking at meeting needs. Well, what about when there are limitations? We all have limitations, okay? We have limitations in different areas, but especially thinking of school. Okay, so our child goes to school and they struggle. How do we relate to that? I think our attitude as parents is critical in the success of our children in overcoming or working through or rising above the limitations that they have. And the first thing I think we need to answer in our minds is the limitation a mistake? Just think about that a little bit. Did God make a mistake when he made your child the way he did? I don't think God makes mistakes. I don't think that we just write off a limitation as, oh, that's the way God made it, and we just leave it, and we don't try to help. But maybe the question we should ask before we just try to remove that struggle is, why did God create that struggle? And I had a student quite a number of years back that struggled immensely. And I didn't know what to do about it a lot of times. And just to make a long story short, that individual has gone on to care for people, handicapped people, in a way that I can't imagine. And I really think that the compassion stems back to the personal experience with struggle. And so I think before we just want to get our child out of the situation where they're struggling, we should think, what does God want to work in them through this? And don't be too quick to take the struggle away, maybe, but to walk with them through it. And sure, look for solutions, look for ways that they can be helped, but don't ever make them feel like somehow it was a mistake that they have it, but to try to help them look to the fact that, yes, I know you struggle, but God has a purpose in this. I really believe that God wants to take the things we struggle with, and you could broaden the spectrum a lot here, and take it to even circumstances that seem to be totally not in our favor, situations that maybe happen to us that are wrong. I think God wants to take those things, and instead of the devil using them as a weapon against us, I think he wants to turn it around and use it as a weapon in his kingdom. He prepares people for his work in so many ways, but it's as we respond well to the tough situations in our life that God is able to make us the people he wants us to be through those situations. So, I would suggest that struggle is not always a bad thing, but rather that through struggle, determination is developed. And just to remember that God often uses the difficulties we face in life to prepare us for the work that he has in mind for us. He only knows what that is. And another thing that struggles do for us is that we develop compassion for those around us who struggle by struggling ourselves. And I really think that if you want to apply that to school teaching, for example, the school teachers that are probably the most effective are ones that had at least a reasonable level of struggle in school, just because they understand what it's like. And I'm not saying that that cannot be developed in someone who did not struggle much in school, because I think God has ways of teaching us. And so I'm not trying to make an ideal category, but I'm just saying that often we, I think, miss the blessing behind the struggle because we think it's not normal. And I would like to suggest otherwise. So I'd like to suggest that physical security is the gateway to emotional stability. And I'm not suggesting that physical security is removing all hardship. I'm just saying you're there beside them. Your child knows that they're not going to be left to struggle by themselves. You're going to be there, and you're going to help them, but they might have to work hard and thrash their way through it. It's as we meet physical needs that we have the opportunity to invest love and to establish trust. And those are foundational for emotional health. And so I'd like to just talk a little bit about the emotional needs of our children. And I'll just say right up front that I don't at all claim to be giving a comprehensive go-over to this, but just some observations and some thoughts that I had. I'd like to turn to Matthew 18 to get started here. I'd like to think about the fact that emotions are a big factor in relationships. You know, often we say you shouldn't dwell on the emotion of the thing, but they are a big factor in relationships. And so I think the first thing that we should seek to establish is trust. Matthew 18, I'd like to read verses 1 through 6. At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus called a little child unto him, and set him in the midst of them, and said, "Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted, and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea." And then Ephesians 6, verse 4 says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." And so the thing I'm thinking about here is the importance of not taking a child's heart lightly. To never shame your child intentionally in public and or otherwise. Don't make light of their fears. Trust that takes so much work to establish is very easily lost in a moment of carelessness. And I don't say this from a premise of having done it right, but maybe rather having seen after the mistake. And so I think it's important that we respect our children as the person that they are, and to take time to be interested in the things that are big to them. And maybe sometimes we almost don't notice how big a thing it is to them because we don't think it's that big. Another way I think it's important for us to respect them enough to teach them to respect others. All of this is not just buddying up to them. You may have to make some tough confrontations. But if done correctly, it will develop trust. While they may not enjoy always the corrective measures you take, there's going to be security in the fact that you actually care enough to do it. And if we can do it in a right way, I think it can work out to be a positive thing. There's an illustration I picked up from someone who was talking about teachers relating to their students, and about our tendency to make corrections, and very little affirmation. And he said, "What can happen pretty soon is that we're essentially writing checks on an empty account." And so he suggested the idea of that we as people have a love tank. And when people affirm us and just are kind to us, they're making deposits in that tank. And we can do that with our children. And then when time comes that they need a correction, there's a balance there. And yeah, the correction's not going to feel good, but they're going to remember, oh yeah, but they love me. They'll remember the other instance. And even if they don't remember the specific instance, they will know it. And so if we can make deposits on that love tank as we have opportunity and look for those opportunities, be intentional about it, it can go a long way when we do need to make a correction. Another factor I think we need to help our children with in relationships that they deal with, this is maybe switching a little bit to helping them deal with relationships around them, and that is relating to fact and feeling. You know, to our children, the felt reality is the reality. And if they felt like someone else slighted them, that person did slight them. You know, that's exactly how they saw it and felt it. And I think we need to be aware that that's how they feel it. And at the same time, teach them to learn to analyze the facts and to look at the whole picture and just to try to help them moderate the feeling end of it and deal with their friends in ways that are more reasonable than just maybe what they first felt. Another emotional aspect that we as parents deal with, or teachers, and that is attitudes that our children have. Sometimes children don't see why they have to learn something. And I have that question asked me fairly frequently. Why do we need to learn this? I'm not going to go there and give you a bunch of answers for that, but I'd like to think of the fact that learning is an act of submission in any case. Whether you're on the job or anywhere, if you're going to learn, you have to submit to the fact, to someone teaching you. You have to agree that, yes, I need to be taught. And I think that's actually where the problem or where the issue is with a lot of children. They just need to learn that I need to be taught. And that, for a lot of us, is a lifelong process of learning to accept the fact that we need to be taught. Jesus said in Matthew 11, he said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." He said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me." And he promises rest to those who do that. Jesus is essentially inviting us to join the school that is who he is, to learn who he is. And That takes submission. And I think it's a great time for our children to learn in school that learning takes submission. And maybe I don't see the big picture yet of why this is important, but I can do it with a good attitude anyway. And I think we as parents are a key factor in developing that attitude, the attitude of a teachable spirit. And another factor in attitudes is the thing of accepting personal responsibility. You know, we as people naturally self-justify, we'll shift the blame, we'll skew the details in our favor, we'll make it look good for us. And I think parents are on the front lines of confronting that type of dishonesty on a heart level. I think it's important that we do. And I don't think it's possible for us to do that without the help of Christ in us, because if he isn't in us, we'll be skewing the details and shifting the blame and self-justifying while we're trying to deal with our children. And so I think it's very important that we are surrendering to Christ in all of those things first and foremost. Another area that children need to learn to accept personal responsibility for is just their moods. Sometimes they think that, well, this is just how I feel right now. Well, get over it. It's time to change. And I realize it doesn't just work that way, but I think it's important that we as parents model that too, because sometimes we are grumpy too. And I think it's important that we model changing our attitude and doing our best to do that. Another area of emotional need, I guess, is that we parents are responsible for, and that is guarding our children's innocence. And I'm not going to go into any details here. I just want to, I guess, point out that it is our responsibility to do that. And that probably the key factor in doing that is developing a close relationship with our child. And so that's going to have to start at a very young age, like at birth. You know, developing that close connection so that you are aware of the pressures and influences they face, and also so that your child is comfortable coming to you and talking about anything. And I also think it's important that we are our child's source of answers. And so I think we have to do our best to give thoughtful answers to any and all questions that they raise. And I'm not suggesting that we give, you know, the full details for anything they ask. But I think we need to be thoughtful about how we ask questions and don't just push them off. Children are innovative in finding answers. And I know that from experience. And we want to be our children's number one source of answers. It's not that other people can't input. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm just saying our children should be we should be their go-to. And we want to be. And something I've thought about quite a bit is the fact that in our day, we may need to talk frankly with our children about issues before we wish we would have to, simply because we'll have to do that if we want to be the first. And I think we need to do think prayerfully about that. I don't have a lot to say about the spiritual aspect of the needs. I think that an emotional connection is the foundation from which we nurture them spiritually. And in a lot of ways, in caring for their physical needs, in meeting their emotional needs, the way we do that sets the premise for the way they relate to spiritual things. And we also have to acknowledge and realize that we cannot ultimately take care of our children's spiritual needs. Only Christ can. And so we bring our children to a knowledge, and we do our best to model it. We try to teach them the foundations of character through consistent and loving training and through mentoring. And we try to model daily submission to Christ. And then it's between Christ and them. And I think that takes faith on our part. I'd like to look at Philippians 4 just for some thoughts on that, the idea of modeling Christ to them. Philippians 4, beginning in verse 4, says, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice." I think it's important that we do not forget that it's a joyous thing to walk with Christ. It's a foundational truth that when we are walking with Christ, we live joyfully. And I so often fail in that. Verse 5, "Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand." Just developing a God consciousness, and that affects everything I do and say. God is right here. And it affects how I'm acting. Verse 6, "Be careful for nothing." And that means, like, don't be full of care. Don't be worrying about things. "But in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God." And I think here we have the opportunity to show them that we're not going to worry and fret and stew over things. We're going to take it to God. We're going to let him work it out. That shows that we actually do depend on God. And that will be their premise when they face things like that. Well, who can help me here? And they'll remember, well, Mom and Dad went to God. And I think it's an important premise, and that we don't miss the thanksgiving. That they, okay, so we had a tough situation that came up. We prayed about it, and God answered it in some way. Do they hear us thank him for that? I think it's important that we are intentional about things like this. Verse 7 gives a promise. "And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things." I think in a way this could be a bit of a sieve for our homes. Just run things through that sieve. For our own lives personally, in relating with our children, just have that in front of us. I think it could be very helpful. In conclusion, I just repeat that we parents are responsible for our children. And I believe that responsibility includes their education. And I'm very happy, though, for the blessing of being able to delegate through the school, and for the wonderful potential that has for enhancing our children's education. And I also think it's important that we understand the correlation between sacrifice and value. David talked about countries where it costs a lot to be a Christian. And regardless what choice the children of those people make, they saw sacrifice and they had a good sense of value because of that. We stand in a place where, unless we're intentional, we don't have to sacrifice a whole lot for our school. We can kind of ride along. It's been basically handed to us, and someone will keep it kind of going. But I would suggest that our children's sense of value when they think of the school is going to directly correlate to the sacrifice they see us personally making for it. And so I just offer that as a challenge in closing here. Okay, let's stand for prayer.